We hope you had a very relaxing spa day over the weekend in Belgium. Which package did you sign up for? The sauna? Or maybe the steam room? Or maybe the massage package? How about the hot stones on your back package? Or maybe the jetpack ride through the hills of the track? Or maybe the dinner at the dining room table that floats 150 feet in the air above the track? Whichever package you chose, hopefully you had a great race weekend.
Fucking Raikkonen, what a fucking idiot!
Come on, get that McLaren out of here. This guy is a fucking joke.
With 5 laps remaining, so we need to keep this pace up.
Hey man, don't talk to me through the corners. And he just went off.
Going to retirement. Somebody may have vomiting. Going here, I'm vomiting. I'm getting drunk.
Understood. Bump.
Welcome back for another episode of Purple Sector. I'm your host, Rye Guy. I will be flying solo for this recap. Helmut is out of town for work. He will be for the rest of the week. So it's just the Rye Guy show this week. Spa. What a weekend. A lot to get into on and off the track. And I just want to start with Spa itself. You know, it's kind of under threat for getting knocked off the calendar. It's going to be on the calendar for one more year. Maybe more, but right now, one more year. So Spa and the promoters knew that they had to do it big this year to try and make F1 know that they should be on the calendar for a reason. They have a lot of fans that come. They said they were going to boost the fan experience this time around, which I found interesting. I was curious as to what they were going to do in order to boost the fan experience. And they decided on guys wearing jetpacks flying around the track and floating dining room tables. So, interesting choice by the promoters. Let's start with the jetpack guy. I've always thought those jetpack things are just insanely dangerous and not worth the risk. I mean, it's really cool seeing a guy flying around in that thing, but one small error and that guy's dead for sure, and probably a bunch of other people. So, I don't know. I hope they don't do that every year. That's just the pussy in me, you know what I'm saying? I'm risk averse. Secondly, the floating restaurant table or whatever the hell that is, I'm not a fan, because you typically see that in places that need gimmicks to be cool, right? Like, I know that they have one of those in Dubai. That is a soulless town. It's not a real town. They have to have like gimmicks to make you want to go to Dubai. Like, for example, the indoor skiing in Dubai, or like this, the floating dining room table where you can eat 150 feet in the air or whatever the hell it is. I don't really see the point. I mean, it's just kind of weird to me. Like, what do you do if you have diarrhea when you're up there? Like, do you have to embarrass yourself and say, Hey, crane operator, can you lower us? I'm about to shit my pants. Does that sound like it would be a cool experience? No. What if you have a peanut allergy and your face is swelling up there and they can't crane that thing down fast enough to get, you know, an EpiPen in your chest? I don't know. I think I'm out on floating restaurant tables. So hopefully Spa comes back with more interesting options next year. I won't be there most likely, but at least for the fans, something cooler, something maybe less risky. Like, not jetpacks or floating tables. That's just me, though. And thankfully, the weekend went off without any problems. You know, all the fans who were here again this year, who were at Spa last year and had to deal with all that rain and basically the canceled race, let's call it what it is. It wasn't a race. You know, I'm glad that everything went well this year, because Spa needed it. They really needed this to go well. Secondly, practice one and two were wet. Like, the last 20 minutes or so of both sessions kind of got compromised by rain. So I wonder if all those repeat customers were starting to get PTSD from last year. I know I would have. Crazy stuff. All right, so let's just get into it here. The weekend started off with a very, very funny quote from Christian Horner. He was asked about the new floor regs and, you know, the new guidelines for how much a floor can flex based on this new technical directive. And it's, you know, all these numbers are thrown around for the new floors and how much they're allowed to flex. 10 millimeters, 15 millimeters. So here was Christian Horner's hilarious quote. He said, "My wife often tells me size doesn't matter, so I'm not going to be too fussed about 10 millimeters." So there you go. Christian Horner, just the consummate entertainer and shit stirrer. Whether you love him or you hate him, the guy is entertaining. I'm sorry. He is entertaining. I love it when he when he takes opportunities like this to just make an interview incredibly unprofessional. You have to appreciate it. I know I do. So let's get into some of the goings on. Mercedes brought a special livery. As we talked about on the preview, it was a complete dud. I mean, you barely noticed that it was a special livery. They had retro numbers, and that's basically it. It didn't do anything for me. I'm sure it didn't do anything for you as well. I'm kind of disappointed in Mercedes. They're so conservative, man. I would love to see them really go nuts with a special livery at some point. But I just don't think they have it in them. All right, so all the chatter was shaping up quickly about grid penalties. You will probably never see this many grid penalties in one weekend for a long time, because I think when it was all said and done, we had 7 guys. After quali, at the end of Saturday, we had 7 guys who were set to have grid penalties. Then come race day, you had Yuki Tsunoda added to the list to make it 8. And then Pierre Gasly had some issue with his car as well to make it 9. So nearly half the grid had some kind of penalty that they were carrying to the start of the race. Just absurd. Like, it's, I can't remember this ever happening like this. There's been races before where, you know, a bunch of guys take engine penalties, but not like this. This was absurd. So let's just get into qualifying. Qualifying was delayed because the Porsche Cup drivers don't know what they're doing, and 2 guys wrecked each other in qualifying for their series and fucked up the Armco, so they had to fix the wall. Very interesting stuff. The replay was hilarious. All right, so here were your Q1 and Dunce. Sebastian Vettel, Nicholas Latifi, Kevin Magnussen, Yuki Tsunoda, and Valtteri Bottas. I'm about to blow your mind real quick. Aston Martin, if you had to guess, when was the last time that both of the Aston Martins made it out of Q1? What would you say? Just guess. How many races ago was it, or which race was it? It was 10 races ago in Miami. They're on a 9-race streak of not getting both cars out of Q1. It's just unbelievable how bad that team is at qualifying. I mean, there is literally no quali trim pace in that car, and I don't know when it's going to get better. It doesn't seem to be getting better. Next up, Bottas's Q2 streak ended at 48 sessions in a row. All of his qualifying streaks are ending this year. His Q3 streak ended earlier this year. He was on the longest one of anyone in F1 at the time, and now his Q2 streak is done as well. So Valtteri coming back to earth at Alfa Romeo. He had a good gig in Mercedes for a while there. Here are your Q2 cuties: Daniel Ricciardo, Pierre Gasly, Guan Yu Zhou, Lance Stroll, and Mick Schumacher. Alex Albon makes it into Q3. Hats off to that guy. He's continuing to impress all season. And basically, these qualifying results meant nothing because on paper, we were going to get a massive reshuffling of all these names due to all the penalties. So Q3 is where it starts to get interesting. Verstappen is just flying. You know, we saw his pace in practice. Everyone expected him to just be immense. He was. I mean, even quicker than I was expecting. But more importantly, they left Max in the garage to not give a tow to Perez. I didn't think it was that big of a deal. The commentary were making a huge deal of it. But I suspected the same thing that Red Bull was thinking. They don't care if he's P1 or P2, because typically speaking, at Spa, if you are on pole position, you are always under threat to get overtaken into turn five at the end of the long straight. So I'm sure that's what Christian Horner was thinking. I'm sure that's what Checo's race engineer was thinking. Why not just take the P2, see if we can get Carlos into that turn and save Max a little extra mileage on his new engine so he doesn't have to give him a tow? I didn't think anything of it. But Julian Palmer on the F1 TV broadcast had a different opinion, and he gave us this hilarious sound clip as a result.
Sucks for Checo, really does.
It's so funny to me hearing Palmer say sucks for Checo on television. Very funny. I don't think it's that big of a deal, because in the end, it didn't matter. Checo got P2, Max got P1. All is well at Red Bull. So let's just talk about Max's pace and kind of everyone's reaction to it, at least on Saturday. So Ferrari were kind of, everyone knew that Red Bull was going to be super strong here. They were always going to be really strong. This is the perfect track for them. It's the power circuit on the calendar. This and Monza. You should have not been surprised that Red Bull would be strong or Max would be strong. Now, what will be seen in Zandvoort and Monza is how much these new floor rules or regs and with the new technical directive are playing into that. We don't know yet, but it seems for now that it has certainly helped Red Bull, and Max took full advantage of it. I mean, just insane pace. So Mercedes was kind of losing their mind over this, Hamilton especially. I think it's being overblown, because this was always going to be one of Mercedes' weakest tracks, and they knew that. So they should have come into this weekend just taking what they can get, and they didn't do that. They kind of dropped the ball on Sunday, but I'll get into that later. Anyways, insane pace from Max. Let's just go through the Q3 sweeties here. Of course, on paper, this is not your final grid. Max Verstappen, Carlos Sainz, Sergio Perez, that's your top three, Charles Leclerc, Esteban Ocon, Fernando Alonso, Lewis Hamilton, George Russell, Alex Albon, Lando Norris. That was your top 10, provisional top 10 at the end of Q3. An interesting quality session for sure. I got to say, the biggest thing is Albon making it into Q3 on merit, because he just continues to impress, at least me. He impresses me. I think he needs to be in a better seat, because it's night and day what he's doing versus Latifi. That would be the case for most people, but Albon especially looks really good in the Williams. All right, let's move on to Sunday. Some fun stuff going on in the pre-race. Martin Brundle's grid walk was a good one. I enjoyed when he was walking down the grid, and he just randomly was looking at some of the drivers hanging out, and he says, "Ray-Bans don't look expensive enough on F1 drivers." So the reason why I made a note of this is, A, it's a hilarious thing to say. B, do you think Ray-Ban and Ferrari, because Ray-Ban is a sponsor of Ferrari for a long time, do you think they're pissed about Brundle saying this? Because he's basically saying that Ray-Bans look too cheap for F1 drivers to be wearing, which I don't necessarily agree with. For a common dude like me, Ray-Bans are plenty expensive. But I think it's just a hilarious thing for him to say. I'm sure Ray-Ban was pissed. I'm sure Ferrari was pissed. I wonder if it gets back to Brundle. Probably does. Secondly, Brundle was interviewing Kevin De Bruyne, who plays for Man City. And Christian Horner kind of butted into the interview at one point, and that's when he revealed that he is a Coventry City fan. And Brundle's response to that was simply laughing in Christian Horner's face. You know, I don't know enough about all the ladders of English football, but is Coventry City an embarrassing team to be a fan of? I found it funny that Brundle laughed in Horner's face. It was good banter, good stuff. Brundle always delivers on the grid walks. All right, so let's just move on to the race start here. Very interesting start. So it seems it wouldn't have mattered if Red Bull sent Max out in Q3 to give Checo a tow so he could hopefully be on pole. because Checo had the worst fucking start I've seen in a long time. I mean, he just fucking blew it. I think he was running like in P5 down the Kemmel straight. So from P2 to P5, everyone at the front of the grid was blowing by him. It was just so bad. But that's not the most interesting part of the opening lap. The most interesting part was Lewis Hamilton and Fernando Alonso. Or, as Crofty likes to put it,
drama on the first lap here at Spa.
Man, I'll tell you what, I'm going to get, me and Moot are both going to get a lot of usage out of that sound clip. Just the drama part.
Drama!
So they both had great starts. Lewis had a slightly better start than Alonso. He was gaining on him down the Kemmel straight into that right-hander at turn 5. Lewis tries to go around the outside. Squeezes Alonso way too much. I mean, Alonso is already all the way on the curb. He can't go over anymore, otherwise he's on the grass / gravel. So Hamilton squeezes him way too much. He admitted it after the race. And they come together. Hamilton flies up in the air. His race is done. He broke. You know, he had a water leak, so the engine wasn't cooling. That bad boy started burning up real quick. Bono's fucking yelling at him on the radio to shut it down. Lewis doesn't want to. I mean, they didn't play the whole radio on the broadcast, but Lewis kept trying and trying. Like, almost 30 seconds after Bono had initially told him to shut it down, Lewis was like, I'm still cranking. I'm still trying to see if she'll go. And Bono was like, shut it off, shut it off. So Bono had had enough. Lewis was desperate at that point. And I want to talk a bit, before I get into Alonso's radio, I just want to get a bit into Hamilton's driving this year. So if you're a newer F1 fan, you are probably only familiar with Hamilton's success over the last 7-8 years in F1, because he's had a shitload of success. Just an amazing run with this Mercedes team. But back in the day, in his McLaren days, things started off well. He had a championship potential car in 2007. In 2008, he wins his first title. Then the performance starts to drop off, and then in the early 2010s, Hamilton finds himself, you know, having to really fight for a small handful of wins every season. And in those years, his driving was much scrappier because he was sort of always qualified. He'd be lucky to qualify in the first row. He was typically on the second or third row. And he was just duking it out with the guys at the sharp end of the grid every race, trying to get a win somehow. And his driving this year, to me, is very reminiscent of those years. I mean, there were seasons where Hamilton and Massa were just like beating the shit out of each other every race, constantly having contact. It was like their own mini championship for like third or fourth in the driver standings. And I'm kind of getting the same vibes here. When Hamilton is racing more desperate, which he is this year, this stuff happens, right? So just look at his opening laps this season. He's had contact with Kevin Magnussen like 3 times on opening laps. Now this contact with Alonso, where to me it was just Hamilton driving a little too desperate, which is fine. He wants to, you know, manufacture a win at some point this season. He has to do it via, you know, these aggressive opening laps. If he's going to make anything happen, it's going to happen probably on lap 1, and then hopefully some luck later in the race and a good strategy. That's how it's going to happen. So that's, you know, you could tell where Hamilton's coming from. But I just wanted to point out that his driving this year is reminding me of that, like, 2010, 2011, 2012 driving from Lewis. So anyone who's been an F1 fan for that long and watched him those years probably agrees. It's a little rough around the edges at times, but again, he's driving desperate. So let's move on to Alonso. So Alonso had a ridiculous radio call after the incident where he basically just said, you know, every driver gets hot under the collar in these situations. Alonso said, I believe he called him an idiot.
Drama!
And then he said that Hamilton only knows how to drive from the front of the grid, you know, in first place.
Drama!
Which is not fair to Hamilton, because Hamilton has a shitload of wins from not on pole position or even the front row. I mean, the guy has a shitload of wins from further back than that. So it's just funny to see what certain drivers say when they get hot under the collar. Now, I'm recording this episode late in the week because I've been delayed. So they have since kissed and made up.
Drama!
In fact, I think Hamilton gave Alonso a signed hat at Zandvoort today in the paddock. So all is well. They have kissed and made up, which is good. But anyways, I'm enjoying seeing these two old rivals duke it out on track again. I'm not focusing on the negatives. I think it's a positive that we're getting to see these world champs rubbing elbows again. I mean, we are turning back the fucking clock, and it's awesome. I love it. So I want to see more of it. Hopefully it's clean next time around, but I'm not complaining. All right, let's move on. What else happened? Oh, yeah. So we go to the next lap, and Ocon and Latifi kind of getting their elbows out in the same section of track on lap two. Latifi goes off, spins out like a doofus. That forces Bottas wide.
Drama!
Bottas beaches it. He's out. So those are your only two DNS for the whole race. Bottas and Hamilton, the old Mercedes buddies. I found that interesting. I thought there was going to be way more DNFs here because there typically are. It's a demanding circuit for engines, so you typically see problems, but no. Everyone else brought it home. It's very interesting. Let's move on here. Let me look at my notes. So, yeah, Verstappen just shot out of a friggin' cannon. Unbelievable. I think he had made up by up to P8 by lap two, I think, is what I have on my notes, which is just absurd. I mean, Verstappen was going to be untouchable this week, and everyone knew that after the pace in the practice sessions and then seeing him in quali trim. But I think it all exceeded everyone's expectations because, I mean, no one in the history of F1 has ever won a race starting from the pit lane. Max Verstappen could have easily done that this weekend, like with his eyes closed. That's how fast the Red Bull is for him right now. That's how fast he is. It's just a perfect storm. This was always going to be one of the best tracks for their car this year, and their car is coming alive. Max is an amazing driver. It was the perfect cocktail for the pace we saw. So let's just get past Max for a second here. Hamilton was kind of loitering trackside after his car was retired, and we got one of the funniest shots we've seen in a long time on the broadcast, and that was Hamilton walking by himself down a gravel road. The cameraman was following him for a few steps, and then he just stopped, and Hamilton just kept walking off into the distance, into the sunset. Like, it looked like the end scene to a movie. It was so funny, and it will be memed to death for a while because it's a great meme template. I can't wait to see what memes come from it. It's going to be amazing. All right, what else? Verstappen was flying, as I said. Let's talk about Leclerc for a second. So he had a very interesting start to the race. Not a good one for him. He seems to be getting very unlucky as the season goes on. So Leclerc was making good progress alongside Max on those first two laps. But then, as Max and Charles both rode through that calamitous turn five, turn six, where first Hamilton and Alonso came together, and then Latifi and Bottas came together, they were both getting a shitload of stuff on their visors because of all the dirt and some of the oil and stuff coming off of Hamilton's car. So Max was talking about how he was ripping tear-offs off like crazy. Well, it turns out that Charles Leclerc got a tear-off stuck in his car right at that moment. So a lot of people were speculating that it was Max's, which makes sense because I believe Max was just ahead of him at that point. But some Redditors, being the sleuths they are, they actually dug into the footage. It was Lance Stroll's tear-off that got stuck in Charles Leclerc's car. So that was the beginning of the end for basically Leclerc's hopes of having a really, really good race because his strategy was compromised. I think by lap eight, he had to go into the pits to get the tear-off sorted because he could see smoke coming from a part of his car that was abnormal. He said on the radio, hey, I have smoke coming from like my right brake duct on the straights. Makes no sense. So very interesting stuff. Leclerc is so unlucky. I mean, it's just a triple-headed monster for him. He's making mistakes. Ferrari's making mistakes. And he's unlucky. So it definitely sucks to be Leclerc right now. I hate to say it, but it's true. So yeah, he had a pit earlier than expected to get that tear off of his car. And then from there, they just had to kind of improvise a strategy. Him and his strata and his race engineer had a ridiculously long-winded conversation over the radio about what he should do with his strategy. I mean, it was like a conference call. It was absurd. Ferrari is such an inefficient team. Like, how does this keep happening? And I'm not even talking about yet what happened at the end of the race with Leclerc and the strategists. But we'll get to that. Someone who was having a good race, besides Max, was Ocon. Ocon put on a show for the people. I mean, he had two double overtakes in one race. When's the last time that happened? Like, double overtakes are rare to begin with. So he had a double overtake heading into the bus stop at the end of a lap, and then going down the Kemmel straight later in the race, he picked off two more guys. I mean, he was just gaming this weekend. It was fun to watch. Great race for him. So let's get back to the Max Verstappen watch. So like I said, he was up to P8 by lap two, just simply ridiculous. And then by lap eight, he was all the way up to P3. And then on full merit, I think he took the true lead of the race by lap 18. So just absurd pace. Like I said, if they had chosen to start him from the pit lane, he would have been the only guy to ever do that in F1 history. So maybe next time do that, Red Bull. Go for all the records. Let's talk about... I want to go back to Hamilton and Mercedes. At some point, Mercedes has to give up this dream of a win this year. Like, just accept the fact that it'll come if it comes, but they just need to focus on their reliability advantage, their tire advantage when the weather's right, and just start hunting down Ferrari. The fact that, I mean, Hamilton DNFing on an open lap due to contact and somewhat of a driver error is so rare. And we saw it this weekend. They just need to get both cars home. They need to huddle up after Spa and tell themselves and reiterate it over and over again. We just need to focus on our reliability advantage, get both cars home, and keep taking points off Ferrari. Because Mercedes deserves the second spot in the Constructors' Championship, in my opinion, and they should have already gotten it. Ferrari is busy falling all over themselves, thinking that they can contend with Red Bull at this point. They can't. Everyone knows that. So Mercedes just needs to keep it together and keep chipping away at Ferrari. And I think in 2, 3, maybe 4 races' time, you will see Mercedes in second place. Mark my words. I expect a good Zandvoort for them, too. Let's move on to McLaren. This was an incredibly weak track for them. I mean, they just went backwards, more or less. Lando advanced forwards because of his grid penalty, but not so much Danny Ric. Danny Ric does what he did what he's been doing all season. He went backwards. Just a terrible day for Daniel Ricciardo. Just, yeah, I don't know what to say about that guy anymore. What can you say? Nothing. Okay, let's talk about Ferrari and Leclerc now towards the end of the race. For some reason, Ferrari now all of a sudden wanted the extra point for fastest lap. Leclerc wasn't exactly clear of Alonso at that point, but they still decided to do it. They needed a perfect pit stop. They didn't really get it. It was kind of sloppy, but it wasn't the worst pit stop in the world. And, of course, Leclerc comes out behind Alonso, so that's strike one. Like, that's embarrassing. Leclerc eventually gets him, but then strike two is Leclerc ultimately doesn't have the pace to get fastest lap, so it was just a lot of risk being taken on by Leclerc and Ferrari to try and get fastest lap. And then lastly, due to that tear-off getting stuck in Leclerc's car earlier in the race, it overheated some components and sensors, and it burned out the sensor that is used for the pit lane speed limiter. So as a result, when Leclerc pitted, he went over the pit lane speed limit because of the sensor being faulty. And he, I mean, you can't make this shit up. The race ends, and you see a notice from the FIA and the steward saying, Leclerc is under investigation for speeding in the pit lane. So for all the troubles that Leclerc and Ferrari went to try and snag that one extra point for fastest lap, they got Leclerc a five-second penalty, and he lost that spot to Alonso. So to gain 1 point, they lost, I think ultimately lost three or four. So, I mean, what do you say at this point about Ferrari? Not so much Leclerc. I don't think you can fault him much in this situation. Maybe you could say that Leclerc needs to be more vocal when he thinks that the team is cooking up a disastrous plan. You know, he needs to take a page out of Carlos Sainz's book more and just be brutally honest over the radio when he thinks the team is doing something stupid, which is often. So that's the only thing I could fault Leclerc for. But most of this episode at the end of the race is all Ferrari's fault. The pit lane speed limit thing is just unfortunate for Leclerc. There's nothing he could have done about that. But, man, it just gets worse for them every weekend. And every time you think it can't, and your brain runs out of ways for them to fuck up differently, they do. I don't know what to say anymore. All right, let's move on to the podium and the trophy. A little bit of trophy talk here. Moot and I love to badmouth the boring track outline trophies because, let's be honest, they are boring for the most part. This one was actually cool. So I'll just break it down. We all saw it. It was your typical track outline trophy, but the track outline itself was carved out of wood from an oak tree from the forest alongside the track. And then they had bits of tarmac from the old Eau Rouge Radeon section of the track that they put within the acrylic of the trophy. And then last but not least, within the track outline itself was water from the creek that runs under Eau Rouge, which I thought was really cool. By the way, Eau Rouge means red water, I believe, in French. So I'm assuming there's a lot of iron in that creek, and that's why it's red water. But anyways, I digress. Cool trophy. Very cool. I'm wondering if they sanitize that water or if that thing's going to be like growing fungus and shit in 20 years when it's still sitting on the shelf at Red Bull's factory. It'll be interesting to see. So bonus points for a cool trophy. It's hard to make a track outline trophy cool, but like Moot and I have said, you need gimmicks. We liked the track outline trophy years ago at Imola because it had a diamond on it for the corner where Senna died. So if you're going to do a track outline trophy, you got to have gimmicks. Lastly, let's revisit our bold predictions. I'm warning you, we did terrible this weekend with our bold predictions, so just have a listen.
We've missed you with these bold predictions. I like that.
Fernando Alonso, I expect him to be typical Alonso. He's going to be relishing the position he's in now that he knows he's going to another team. He's going to be racing with his elbows out. I expect him to beat Ocon on Sunday as a result. I'm going to stick my neck out here because he hasn't done this a lot this season. I think Daniel Ricciardo will score points at Spa. Next move, I've got a rainbow podium. I think you will see a Ferrari, a Red Bull, and a Mercedes driver.
You're
on
stealing
that
my bit. That's my favorite, the rainbow podium.
I think there's going to be 3+ DNFs this weekend in the race.
Nice.
I believe that Mick Schumacher is going to beat K-Mag on Sunday.
I say Esteban Ocon will out-qualify and will beat Alonso in the race. So give me the double dip, the Saturday and the Sunday. Ocon will best Alonso. How about this? May be one of the most bold predictions I've ever made. There will be zero Ferrari power unit failures on Sunday.
So there you have it. Just an awful run by me and Moot there. I think we went 2-7. I mean, right now, the crystal ball is broken for Purple Sector as a podcast, because that was a bad outing from us. To be fair, though, it was a weird weekend. There were a shitload of grid penalties. We could not have anticipated that many penalties. It was ridiculous. It was like a phantom grid. Anyways, I'm just saying, go easy on us. All right, want to break down some stats here. This is interesting. Max Verstappen, after this weekend, is only the second driver in the history of F1 ever to have back-to-back wins starting from 10th or lower. So Max obviously went from 10th to 1st in Hungary, the race before this one, and then now in Spa, he went from, I think it was ultimately P13, up to 1st, or P14, whatever it was, all the way to 1st. The last time that happened was the 1959/1960 seasons, where Bruce McLaren, that's the guy who started the McLaren team, won from P10 and then P13 in consecutive races. So very similar to Max. It's only happened twice in the history of F1. So Max is in some very rare company after the Belgian Grand Prix this year. I want to break down my best drives and worst drives. So here were the best drives. Max, obviously, from 14th to 1st. I mean, what else can you say? The guy is driving on another planet right now, and that Red Bull team is just firing on all cylinders. Adrian Newey's car design is fucking coming alive. Ocon, 16th to 7th. The guy had a day. Two double overtakes. Impressive stuff. Pierre Gasly, from the pit lane to 9th. Come on. Is Gasly heating up, by the way? I don't know. It's hard to tell with AlphaTauri because, generally speaking, they're dog shit this year. All right, last but not least, Alex Albon from P6 to P10. Now, I know that sounds weird. It is weird. For him to hang on to a points-paying position in that Williams was ridiculously impressive. I mean, he had so many better cars breathing down his neck all race, and he still managed to hang on to P10 and get that point. The guy's driving really well this year. I'm impressed. All right, here are my worst drives. This should come as no surprise to anyone. Nicholas Latifi qualified P11, finished P18 with the two DNS from Lewis Hamilton and Valtteri Bottas. That makes him dead last. Lastly, this is the worst drive, in my opinion, from the Belgian Grand Prix. Daniel Ricciardo, P7 to P15. When will the pain stop? I mean, when will Daniel Ricciardo truly have a weekend this season where everyone's like, wow, Daniel drove great. He was really impressive. Tell me. I need to know. Anyways, it just gets worse. All right, let's break down the constructor standings here after this race. Red Bull is miles ahead of everyone else on 475 points in first place. Ferrari is now a whopping 118 points behind them with 357. And Mercedes still right there, only 41 points behind Ferrari with 316. I think Mercedes gets Ferrari sooner than later. It would be hilarious if, I mean, we have Zandvoort this weekend, and then we have Monza, I believe. It would be really funny if Mercedes passes Ferrari at Monza in the standings. The Italians would lose their fucking minds. So keep an eye on that. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it's possible. Let's look at the driver standings now after Spa. Max Verstappen has a monstrous 284 points. The next closest competitor is Perez, which that's not a rival. He's 93 points behind Max. And Leclerc is 5 points behind Perez now, and a total of 98 points behind Max. That's almost a 100-point gap. I mean, depending on what happens in Zandvoort, Max will have 4 DNFs in hand and still be able to keep the lead in the championship. So depending on what goes down and whether or not Ferrari can find some pace and if Leclerc can clean up his act and not be so unlucky, Max is going to wrap this championship up with like 5 or 6 races to go. Maybe more. Who knows? Just keep your eye on it. I would love to sit here and say that that won't happen and we will have a competitive outcome for, you know, a more competitive outcome to the end of this championship. But, I mean, I'm sorry. The Red Bull is flying. Max is flying. I just don't see Ferrari doing anything to eat away at their gains. And Mercedes clearly is they've given up on that W13 concept. That Mercedes car is going to look so different next year. You're going to be blown away. Anyways, that'll do it for this recap. I hope you enjoyed it. It's tough flying solo, but I hope I did a good job. And hopefully Mood will be back sooner than later. You should be back for next week. And I will have a Dutch Grand Prix preview out tomorrow as well. So just enjoy the Rye Guy show for this week, and then we'll get back to it next week. Thanks for listening. See you guys on the track.
Purple Sector.
Oh, it's purple.
Purple.
Three purple sectors.
Three purple sectors.
Yeah, the car is terrible to drive. Very difficult.
I want to change things. I want to stop Mercedes dominating.
Honestly, what are we doing? Racing or pink one?
Okay, Lewis, close that gap as much as you can. It's hammer time.
It's not getting the blue flags.
How did you call that last lap incident? Brainless.
Daniela, a hard-fought fourth place in the end for you.
Hard-fought? Not really. I thought that was boring.
So I think we can call Max Verstappen the baby-faced assassin.
I think we clench our butt cheeks and hope we stay there to the end, Martin.
I'm driving like a grandma.
What the f***?
Looks like my wife's driving that car.
Yeah, tell the safety car to slow down.
He's stroking that Ferrari.
I know I'm losing time to Vettel, but I really don't care.
They are racing.
So it's happy hour, basically.
People just simply don't have the balls to stick to what they say.
Come on, mamma mia, what the hell is going on?
A firm Valtteri position, stay as they are. We'll talk about it after the race.
We are here to race and not to just hang out, so...